RadioInfluence.com. The future is now.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to a very special episode of the Dark to Light podcast with...
No Collusion Val.
You're going to use that one forever. You could use that one forever.
I was saying it the other day. There was such a pep in my step the last couple of days, just going out to get coffee, just skipping the way down the sidewalk, tipping my hat to people. Hello, good morning, No Collusion. You know, it's just, it's like a new day. It's morning in America.
You know, I watched this morning, Fleckus did a video where he went to like U.S., some I don't know which California university he was at, and he did interviews with people about No Collusion, and really like 90% of the people he talked to were like, it's fantastic. I didn't believe it anyway. Like, it was really stunning.
Yeah, it's great news. I mean, and you know, there's a couple of sour grapes out there that go, I don't know if it's good. Like, oh, really? Really? What are you saying here?
This is what I'm worried about, and I haven't said this yet out loud. Here's what I'm worried about. So, you know, there's been like analysis ad nauseum at this point, Frank, about this thing, right? But the one thing I know, just because of the obstruction nonsense that Mueller put in there, that this report has got to have something that they can use as some damning, you know, indictment of the president, even though it ultimately came to the conclusion that there was absolutely no cooperation between anyone in the Trump sphere and Russia. Like, don't you think there's going to be something shady in there that they'll like grab onto with some big, you know?
Of course. This was all it was ever going to be. This is the final Easter egg of what was supposed to be just this long, arduous journey where they can hopefully pick as many people off as they could with process crimes and perjury traps and of course, just managing public opinion. That was the main goal of the whole thing, you know, so. The end result here, as we know from the indictments of all those Russians that'll never see American soil, all that stuff was insurance for the actual probe's legacy itself. Well, it didn't turn up anything. Oh, yes, it did. We have 36 indictments. Here's Russians who were meddling. Here's this. So it worked into the body of work here. On the entire probe itself was all of these validating nonsense talking points so that no matter where it leads, and they knew it was going to lead nowhere because the people who helped launched it knew that there was nothing there that can be actually pointed to as real evidence well into the establishment the first couple of months of the president's first term, they knew that there was nothing to point to. So this was ultimately where we were going to go. So to say that there's not going to be something hidden inside that could be spun into headlines, I said it before on Twitter over the weekend when all this stuff was going on and the press was first trying to make their first attempts to manage their humiliation. They are what they're looking for right now here, and they're fighting for the right to speculate and propagandize by going into the nitty-gritty of this report, not letting anything go. And they want to be able to work with the names and the nouns, the people, places, and things that they can turn into headlines and keep spinning this around. The only thing is now that they're only addressing a very minor part of the population who will, no matter what you show them at this point, go to their graves believing that Donald Trump is a Russian agent. That's just pretty much it. So it was always going to be a political document. And I see now that we're going to get, 2 weeks until everybody can get the report. So you're going to have 2 weeks of speculation from these lunatics. They'll be talking about it in their little bubble. And then after they get whatever they do, they'll spin whatever. But I'll tell you one thing, Tracy. It's going to be really hard for them to keep talking about what may or may not, what one comma over here, what an ampersand over here means. They're going to try to find double meaning for words here. Here and there, it's going to be really hard for them to stay focused on the Mueller report when all their friends are getting arrested.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's funny because we came up with the timeline and I think we're spot on it. You agree?
Yeah, absolutely.
When I was doing my analysis, the one thing that I said that really bothered me about this whole thing is how they are saying that the Russians hacked the DNC and gave the stuff to WikiLeaks when they didn't even interview WikiLeaks.
Tracy, I said we were talking about this behind the scenes, and yep. I brought it up on my show with Red Pill 78 on Monday night. And I said that when I was looking into Bill Barr's report, when it goes into that section of the report talking about Russian interference and the DNC and all that stuff, those you know, the Russians did this and they hacked it and they leaked DNC information on Hillary Clinton and John Podesta. I said out loud, and I'm glad that you and I have been agreeing on this, that is a very dangerous concession to make for yep. Bill Barr or anything, to just keep playing into that, because that is the base of the House of Cards.
Yeah.
Pull that card out. You don't need to prove any of the circumstantial nonsense that popped up along with the smear campaign above it. That is where the House of Cards was built, and they're still conceding. Both sides are conceding that the Russians were the ones that got these emails from the DNC.
Yeah, because think of the self-reflection and the change that would need to come from, you know what I mean? I mean, it's so big, but it's you know, we're going to give you 90% of the truth, American people, but this 10% here, we're going to just sweep under the rug for 20 something years until, you know, all of this has kind of died down. And then maybe like the JFK thing, we'll pull it out for you guys and let you see what actually happened.
Well, and it makes me wonder too, Tracy, is just like, what's the point there? Is it because, okay, well, we can have our cake and eat it too, where old leftover factions within the government can A, clear the president and stick a knife into the Democrats, who are obviously the most radical things that are hurting the country, but then B, to also keep something in place to keep animosity up with Russia? It's like they want us to be clear of certain dark clouds, but still have some kind of suspicion of Russia. And I'm not saying that they are our brothers in arms and our friends and our closest allies, but, you know, fair is fair. Can we know what happened from the beginning here? I mean, Jesus.
I almost think that there could be another aspect playing into this, because, like, I've talked about this a bunch of times. Right before the election, Steve Pachenik showed his face for the first time in like 20 years. In a video that he released about a silent coup and a war between intelligence factions that was going on behind the scenes before the election, and had to do with Julian Assange and WikiLeaks and that information from the DNC. Now, Pachenik is an information / disinformation agent. We know, you know, his history is documented, but not, you know, everybody's got an opinion on the guy. But this video, when it came out, do you remember?
I probably have seen it. I usually stumble upon his stuff as it comes out.
See, you would remember this, and I think I'll send it to you. When I saw this, it was a couple days before the election happened. When I saw it, it was stunning to me. It's 4 minutes long, and it gave me and my entire family chills, because we knew what, you know, we'd been following what had been going on with WikiLeaks and stuff like that. As a matter of fact, the reason why I started my channel back up at all was in 2016, because of the WikiLeaks emails. I was having a hard time getting the information out via text on what was Facebook at the time. So I decided to start doing video reviews of all the emails and the documentation and what they meant. And so I was embedded in there for months. And it was striking, because he basically said that there was a war going on between the white hats and the black hats, and that the white hats were fighting this war against the Clintons and the dark factions of the intelligence community and winning, because of the bravery of Julian Assange to publish all this information. I don't know if anybody interviewed Steve Pachenik, but maybe could there be a possibility that this is being brushed under the rug because that faction doesn't want to be exposed?
I would believe that. If I'm sure people can come up with other theories that I would believe as well, because there's something, there's some piece missing here that you can go this only 90% of the way, and that last 10% is the most crucial.
Yeah.
How can we say, oh, no collusion and no obstruction of the no collusion, but we're not going to get down? It was the DNC leak. It was the leaks of those emails that actually spurned They gave birth to the diversion
from
story.
Bernie. Yeah.
You know, it was the diversion story. That's what this was. The whole Russia thing was a diversion story away from, so those people would not concentrate on the content and the leaks, and they're concentrating on how the leaks came out. And of course, that was the foundation upon which it was turned into a spy campaign, and then of course the really sloppy coup attempt. So I don't know why you would go that far and not push the ball over the goal line.
I don't know. Maybe they can guarantee a takedown of all the key characters, make an example, put them all away in jail. And
while preserve what, though? Preserving what?
I'm not agreeing with it. I'm just giving you a perspective. You know, I don't agree with you. I agree with you. I think that we should know what happened. And, you know, I think it's insulting to the American people for them to. It's provably false by forensic review. It's not like we're just some conspiracy theorists here. And it really bothers me. Like, Sean Hannity has had Bill Binney on his show. And I got to tell you, of all the hosts out there, he's been the one to really narrow down on all this stuff the most out of everybody. There's just this, like, it's almost like, you know, we do this podcast and a lot of people watch it, and it's but the second you start talking about this stuff, like, even people who know this, who have a bigger, wider audience, just won't go there. And I think it's really time for like a culture shift in terms of that, because we need to know what the hell happened here. And there's been scientific evidence to prove that there is no way on God's green earth that this information went over some sort of fiber cable overseas. To be
or
able
any,
to,
any remote location it's, that it's not there, native.
Exactly. And you know, people talking about this dying Cy Hirsch. I mean, we've covered this. Cy Hirsch is not dead. But Cy Hirsch, during the whole Seth Rich nonsense, whether it was Seth Rich or not, came out and said that this is what happened. So, it's being swept under the rug. It's the one thing about this that really, I just shake my head and kind of sigh, and it's really disappointing, leaves a really bad taste in my mouth.
Cy Hirsch, I played the Seymour Hirsch thing on the air. Not only was he talking about Seth Rich and the Dropbox he set up and all that stuff, but he also was very, very clear that this was a Brennan and Clapper operation. This was CIA.
Yep.
And you want to know the thing to really focus in on is that CrowdStrike is CrowdStrike and Google are married together. Google and the CIA are married together.
Yep.
This is all a stepping stone. It's all lily pad nonsense, putting a buffer between what's really going on. And once again, by taking just the opinion, the blindly, no questioning of what CrowdStrike says happened with the DNC, just taking that is seriously just taking the opinion from the CIA.
It's irresponsible at best. And you know, talk about Brennan. We'll move into Brennan a little bit. And I got to say, you know, people out there that are watching this, share the show, because this needs to be talked about. And it bothers me to no end that we're like merging the worlds between establishment media and independent media, sort of, because you're seeing like characters in the independent space being brought into the mainstream space by the journalists out there who still have a platform and sort of some integrity. You know, you hear Dan Bongino often talk about Jeff from The Markets Work, who is an amazing guy, does amazing work. Like, you hear him talk about Undercover Huber. You hear him talk about these people who have been doing all this work. I mean, Nick Falco with the Okonis Lores tweet that we'll talk about in a second. There needs to be more of this, but you can't just stop short and not talk about the things that may be deemed unpopular by the same people who pushed this conspiracy in the first place.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Well, you were talking about Sean Hannity before, how he, despite all of his frustrating TikTok stuff over the last couple of years, he was the biggest name. And at one point, the tip of the spear asking questions about Seth Rich.
Agreed. As if,
and then all of a sudden it stopped. The pressure was coming from somewhere.
Yep.
I mean, now that we're looking at this Mueller report, I'm asking myself, I wonder what he was getting behind the scenes. Hey, listen, we're going to get there somehow, but we're going to get there without having to touch this.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, it all feeds back in together. It all feeds back in together.
Yeah, because it's almost like questioning any other kind of questioning the official story of 9/11. How disrespectful of you to the dead. Well, disrespectful to want to make sure that the dead died. And we know exactly why.
Yeah.
Is it disrespectful to want to double check and kick over every rock and stone that we can? I mean, there's something wrong here. I don't know. Whatever.
No, I'm with you. Like, for example, we're jumping around a little. There's a lot to cover, and I didn't even realize how much there was until we started talking. Mm. Let's talk about how they jump to the New York field office and the SDNY as their kind of savior for all these prosecutions that are going to be coming down against Trump and his family that were referred out from Mueller's investigation, right? That's where they jump to. And I keep trying to remind everybody that this is another report that was widely ignored because it was called too conspiratorial when there's hard evidence of it. Probably the biggest story I've ever broken in my time doing this. Pinned tweet on my profile, OIG bombshell hidden within the OIG report on McCabe's leak to Barrett of the Wall Street Journal is an astronomically damning correlation between Lynch, the New York field office of the FBI, McCabe, and the NYPD. And it has to do with Wiener's laptop, central to this entire story. They jump to the fact that the FBI and the New York field office is going to be some linchpin for Trump, completely forgetting what Maine Justice did to that office. They took the Eric Garner prosecution. They took the Eric Garner case and weaponized it against the FBI and the New York Police Department because they wanted them to not talk about what they found on Wiener's laptop.
Still nothing. We haven't heard anything since.
No, other than like sex crimes with children. I mean, that was in the FBI agent's notes. Now, we don't know if this is not part of a bigger investigation that's going on right now. And I know everyone's like, well, we're not hearing anything about these. Good. We're not supposed to be. And I talked about it yesterday, how now is basically the time where they're saying that like the blinds have been lifted up and the sunlight's coming in and everybody's on television saying we've got to prosecute these people. We've got to figure out what happened. Newsflash, this has been ongoing for a year now, if not more. And now they can just start. The public consumption or the public opinion of it is ready. They're there. People are ready to hear what happened. The chains have been broken. So they're not starting now. They started already. Just everybody remember that. But the New York FBI is not a deep state friendly division. They're just not. I mean, there's article after article about Rudy Giuliani and him working, you know, with the people there and like whatever supposed leaks were coming out and what he knew beforehand. And they have an axe to grind. They knew they were stripped from being able to cover things or work on things. They were gagged. They were bound. Evidence was taken from them. But there's articles out there that show that Wiener laptop, the data on it was actually brought and stored at a facility that who owns Rudy Giuliani?
Who owns him?
Who owns the facility that is storing the data from the Wiener laptop?
I don't know.
Rudy Giuliani.
Oh, I didn't know. That was the answer. I didn't know.
Sorry. So, you know, this whole New York off this whole New York angle is not as powerful as people want it to be. Now, the state government in New York, as you know, Frank, from the Schneiderman days and the Preet days, he was a U.S. attorney, but you know what I mean.
Yeah,
it's corrupt as hell. And of course, they're going after the Trump Foundation. God forbid they go after the Clinton Foundation in New York. But they're going after, they're corrupt as hell.
God forbid they go after Harvey Weinstein.
Right. Or even Eric Schneiderman, who was accused of sexual assault and walked away without a charge. I mean, it's like Jesse Smollett. It squared and quadrupled.
Yeah, but, you know, listen, according to Barbara Streisand, Eric Schneiderman's sexual needs are his sexual needs.
Yeah, I know. You know, honestly, on the Streisand front, she's been abused in Hollywood, that woman. There's an interview of her talking about her abuse from way back in the day and how she's like a victim who is just like accepted that this behavior is just people's way. Oh, no, yes. I'm confusing Streisand and Midler. My bad.
Yeah. Well, they all have Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah. Yeah.
They love the status that it's given them. Now they get to use multi-syllabic words and swill wine.
Yeah, well, Swill away, people. Anyway, you know, like the New York state government is corrupt as hell. So maybe we'll see some stuff out of there. But when, you know, the feds are involved here, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine last night about what's going on with Smollett. And this person's of the opinion that Fox wanted Barr and Horowitz and everybody to start looking into what's going on there. Now, I'm not sure if I'm on board with that. But the truth of the matter is that there is federal overlap here. And those people report to William Barr. So this could be the beginning of something very interesting going on in terms of accountability and cleanup in the Justice Department.
Hey, listen, you know what? All things considered, Tracy, we knew that this was, we've said before, and I think that in our own, both you and I together and separately, we've been very, very clear that the one thing we should never have expected out of the conclusion of the Mueller, the Mueller's main body of work is admissions and mea culpas. And we weren't going to get any kind of closure here. These are insane, insane people. And they were going to keep pushing, and they were going to find a way to stretch this out. Like silly putty, they're going to stretch it out until it's just a flimsy string of nothing that nobody's even paying attention to anymore. And this is just what we are going to get. But all things considered, this week has been unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, March 25th, between the child pornography extradition, between the $1 billion that was allocated at the Pentagon for 58 more miles of border wall, and then we had, of course, this
Avenatti.
I mean, he was supposed to be running for president. Now he's going to be begging for parole.
You know who took him down?
Who?
The New York FBI.
Oh, see, and there you go. And that's the New York FBI that's supposed to be taking down Trump.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's so many things to marvel at this week so far. It's only Wednesday, which is why I think it was just a really great thing. I mean, we had to go live early this week.
Yeah. No, I agree. There's too much going on. And this might become like, as things happen, this might become a little bit more frequent of an occurrence. Brennan, let's talk about Brennan, because I've been kind of laser focused on him over the past couple of days as well. Like, before the Mueller report dropped, I started talking on Twitter about how I think that Brennan unwittingly was, I think he was set up. I think that he was pushed out of the, I think that all of them were continuing to receive intelligence, in quotes, that they were going to go after Trump and get him, even though this whole entire story is fake, that they were going down, that this was all going to work out, but that intelligence wasn't real. And then at the last minute, Mueller drops his report and they all realize that they've been getting bunk intelligence this entire time about everything. And you see Brennan less than a week and a half ago on television about the Ides of March. We talked about that on the show, right? Mm-hmm. He talks about the Ides of March, how if there's indictments of the kids, they're going to come down on Friday. And the last report, you know, he's not going to push that out. He's going to drop it on a Friday with the indictments of the children and the family. And, you know, everything's going to come down then. And he doesn't want to be dramatic about it. And then not even a week and a half later, the Mueller report drops and he's completely cleared of any connection to any Russian collusion whatsoever. And Brennan is sitting there like, not even a week and a half ago, I just told everybody. Like, you wouldn't do that if you had knowledge. You would start to cover your tracks earlier. You know what I'm saying?
I think maybe either way, he's stuck between a rock and a hard place. And even if he was duped, I mean, he was such an integral part of this scam from the onset. I'd have to imagine he was a little bit more willing to go in on this from the beginning, knowing that, OK, well, we have certain layers of protection around us. If this doesn't work, we'll be able to hide behind this. If that doesn't work, we'll be able to hide behind this and whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think that over time, they have just seen all of these layers of protection flake away and they became more and more exposed to now there's nothing left to do but say, I guess I got bad information. Because I'll tell you, this man, he used his past position, whether it be witting or unwitting, he used his past position as director of the CIA to wrap his very blatant accusations of treason in a blanket of authenticity.
No, I know.
And I said it last night, too. If you're a normie who's watching television at home and you still think that the CIA works in the world's or in the country's best interest, you would take that former director's word with a little bit more than a grain of salt.
No, yeah. And I mean, even the hosts he's talked to has said that to him as he tries to like, oh, no, poo, 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 poo. This is what I'm telling you. Something of this gravity for them to feel that they were protected like that up until the very end with the tweets and the accusations and the nastiness about being a traitor. Just take a look back through John Brennan's tweet history. And if they're going to do this to Brennan, in my humble opinion, they're all screwed.
Comey doesn't know what's going on either.
I think they're all pushed out. I think they had people either they were wittingly providing them with bad information or unwittingly providing them with bad information in what may end up being the biggest internal counterintelligence leak investigation in the nation's history.
Exciting times, Tracy.
I mean, seriously. So that's my take on Brennan. And Brennan then wraps in Clapper, Obama, Yates, Carlin, Comey, Strzok, Page, all of them. Anyone who's gone out and started talking, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's all of them. The big bunch of them. One more point on the report. Very interesting to me that they chose to say that despite, multiple attempts by Russian-connected individuals to work with the Trump team and the Trump orbit, they were all denied. And it brought me back to the text that Nick Falco discovered in December 2015 about Okonis Lores, plural. Geopolitical people overseas, in plural, working as spies. And at the time, even the president tweeted about this. It went nuts. And the entire media called the president a massive conspiracy theorist. Right-wing conspiracies about spying way before the investigation even started, which we now know is all bull. The investigation started probably back then, setting this whole thing up.
But those accusations of being wiretapped were based on New York Times reporting.
Yes.
They were reporting that in the New York Times. I remember Mark Levin put that together in like March. He started putting all the pieces together in March of 2017, and he got a lot of shit for it too.
Yep.
And all he was doing was putting together the public print reporting of how they have this case building against Donald Trump based on communications they have been able to take off of wiretaps or some other kind of surveillance, whether it be direct or indirect. So it's amazing how they dangle this in front of your face. And then when you call them out on what they're doing, they say, oh, my God, what are you, a theorist?
Yeah, I know. I know. They use their own words and they still don't. Yeah, it's crazy. The other thing that, at this point in time comes back to be very poignant to me is how ingenious Trump was to taunt James Comey with the tapes comment. He was forced to expose himself because of that. Watch out, Jim. We might have tapes. He leaked classified information to a reporter to cover his ass in that because he didn't know whether or not Trump did have tapes. He might have had tapes. And then the whole deal with Rod Rosenstein being kept on board to sign off on the obstruction issue. I mean, you can't get better. You just can't.
There's a lot of cover your ass stuff that was going on there. You remember even Susan Rice's last minute email.
Yep.
On inauguration day.
We never would have known about the meeting that they had if she hadn't have done that to try and say. I mean, who does that?
We wanted to make sure everybody handled everything spot on according to regular.
Yeah, and not only that, Tracy, but I think that is that is such an important piece of evidence, at least for everyday Americans who are trying to piece this stuff together because they know that they're not going to get any real, full stories from the corporate media, because like I and countless others have said, isn't it amazing that no matter what we talk about with this subject, how it's now winding to a close, literally every secretary, every head of every department or major bureau, underlings, no matter who it is, almost the entirety of the Obama administration, from their UN ambassadors to the CIA, the ODNI, it doesn't matter where the hell it was. The secretary of we have Loretta Lynch, Sally Yates. Everybody at every level and their underlings were playing some kind of a role in this. But Barack Obama never knew about anything. He's the only name that nobody's talking about with any kind of real gusto.
Until now, because you know who's been doing it more than anyone, and I'm shocked about it, to be honest. Ari Fleischer was the first one that I heard on mainstream TV to bring up Barack Obama's culpability. Now Joe DiGenova is talking about it. People are really stuck because Catherine Herridge has been doing some fantastic reporting in regards to text messages between Lisa Page and Andrew McCabe. And I wouldn't be even surprised to find out that those two were going at it under the sheets as well, to be honest. We'll see. But I think that as these tech, there are 75 pages of McCabe Page text messages that they're referencing these meetings with the White House and the top levels of all of these organizations that you're talking about sitting there with Barack Obama. It's all coming out. All of it.
Yes, indeed.
Like it's almost as though like if Mueller didn't happen, we would never have gotten here in a way. As painful as it's been, because the public is ready now. Like there was none of this going. If there was never a special counsel to investigate it, then like people would always be saying,
well, we'll never know because they didn't invest.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. I just hope we go farther.
Listen, Lindsey Graham is say what you want about him now. I still don't 100% trust the man, to be honest with you, but he knows McCain was involved in this and what he did with the dossier. And he's already come out and covered his ass on it and said, I told him to take it to the FBI. Now, Kramer leaked it to every mainstream media journalist on the face of God's green earth. But McCain's claim to, you know, taking it to the grave was I handed this to the FBI because I didn't know what to make of it. Right.
Yeah.
But Lindsey Graham knows what happened. He knows. And he was asking a whole bunch of questions, you know, about what was going on. And these investigations that the Senate's going to do, these hearings, they're not for criminal culpability. They're for public consumption, to tell the story in public. And we're going to learn a lot more about what's going on in terms of investigation from what people can and can't say when they're brought in front of these committees to kind of tell the story.
Well, I'm ready for it, Tracy. I'm ready.
Me too. And it's going to be a busy summer.
It really is. And this is going to be fantastic.
Agreed.
Anything else we have?
I mean, we could talk quickly about Mike Lee and then we can cut it for today's special episode.
Oh, you know, Mike, I didn't even know about this until prior to the episode. And I thank you so much because I'm going to bring it up on tonight's show because, of course, there's Star Wars references. And not only that, but with the 12 Republicans that voted against, that voted for the Democrats' legislation to block the national emergency announcement, the two Republicans that I do not cast out is, I said from the beginning, Rand Paul and Mike Lee. I said, these guys who would have been taking this principled stance no matter what. Mm-hmm. It was a little bit too close for comfort this time around because, of course, you have the Susan Collins, the Lisa Murkowskis, the Roy Blunts and the Mitt Romneys all doing their same old nonsense, their same old wishy-washy nonsense. So those two votes, Mike Lee and Rand Paul, they made things a real, real close call right there. And but this is why I say I defend it. I defend Mike Lee. He's a good guy.
No, they are. I mean, Rand Paul is just, they're just principled people. They just have principles and they do not waver on them. And, you know, you can say what you want. Like sometimes you got to give a little bit here. And I think it's important to have principles. And I'm pissed off that they did this because it's like, dude, come on, help us out a little bit here. But I understand why.
I actually like the I warmed really quickly to the idea that was being floated around when they were looking to when Gorsuch finally got the nomination. Mike Lee's name was one that was being floated around there. And I really like the idea because I know that he respects the Constitution and looks at it in its original form pretty well. But it's one of those things where like, oh, man, do you want him in the Supreme Court or do you really want to lose a senator that good? We don't have that many statesmen left in Congress who can actually articulate a reason why liberty is important and part of our culture here. You know, nobody's making those statements like Mike Lee and Rand Paul do. Everybody else just goes off and they try to take a stance on the political issues of the day instead of the principled stances. So, yep. You know.
Yeah, well, he did this thing on the floor yesterday, because I know Mr. Meter's about to expire for you. But he did this thing on the floor yesterday where he basically brought out you guys have to see this. I'll put it in the show notes. A Reagan on a raptor, Aquaman, shark. Raptor
meaning a dinosaur, everybody. A velociraptor from Jurassic Park.
A velociraptor from, and then what was that, a Hoth?
Yeah, a Tauntaun.
A Tauntaun, yeah.
A Tauntaun from the planet Hoth from Empire Strikes Back.
Yes, yes, yes. I'm not a huge Star Wars aficionado like my husband and you are. And then Sharknado the movie to explain how insane the Green New Deal actually is, delivered this speech with eloquence and a straight face with beautiful diagrams and pictures to go alongside.
Aquaman. It was amazing.
It was really incredible. Like, incredible. And seahorses to help get around in Hawaii.
You know, if there's one thing I can say about this. And last night on my show, I was talking about John Brennan. And once I got away from John Brennan's his little stint on MSNBC with Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski, where he looked very, very nervous. He was gulping, blinking, stuttering.
Looked like he was in a hotel, didn't it?
It looked like he was in a hotel, or I joked, a funeral home, because it just had those funeral home curtains behind him. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at him, and we did all that analysis. But the other thing is there too, that it's really interesting to understand, and this ties in with the Green New Deal and Mike Lee, that back in 1980, I believe it was John Brennan who voted for Gus Hall, who was the Communist Party presidential nominee. Now, Communist Party USA does not run presidential nominees. They don't put really a lot of time into that ever since that 1980, because they really realized that their hooks were in the Democrat Party, and it was just going to take a couple of more rounds to really fester and turn into the monsters that they are today. And I really urged people to go and look at this, and I'll tell the audience over here on Dark to Light as well. Go to cpusa.org, okay? Once you get to cpusa.org, click Party Info, and then go and read. Click the next link that pops up will be Party Program. Read the Party Program. It is a never-ending screed about sexuality, about color, gender, transgender, universal health care. It is all UN Agenda 2030 stuff, the need to kill capitalism. It is, by and large, what we are looking at with the Democrat Party. It's just what it is. I'm going to read you. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I just had a couple other things, but yeah. You can say what you want.
No. I'll do it at the end. Continue.
I had a summary over here that I took from there. This is a one paragraph summary from Communist Party USA. And I'm just going to put this out there, and that'll be my piece. Here is it. You tell me if this sounds familiar, Tracy. The problems of exploitation, oppression, and survival facing humankind can only be solved ultimately by the elimination of the exploitative system of capitalism. Our survival depends on the transformation to socialism, the U.S. working class, with a long revolutionary history and many powerful mass movements and organizations, has the potential to make this transition happen. That means building unity for peace, for protecting and expanding democracy, for living wage jobs, for universal health care, for real equality for all those who are nationally or racially oppressed, and women, for an end to political control of the ultra-right over our political institutions, and for an end to the economic rule of the transnational corporations. Building and strengthening organizations and alliances between working class and its allies, winning real unity in the course of struggle, is the path from our current struggles towards socialism. Now, the last thing I will say about this is, if you go, if you spend any time on this, you will quickly realize that the only difference between the Communist Party USA, the official Communist Party manifesto, located in none other than Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and Saul Alinsky's Chicago, of course, the only difference between CPUSA and the Democrat Party is that the communists are honest about who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And the Green New Deal is an embodiment of this screed. It is all the same thing. We are fighting a multi-front war. People are wearing different masks, but it's all the same thing that's converging on us.
We're fighting communism.
Oh, yeah. But remember, communism is just a tool. There are the ideological communism is for pie in the sky, bubblegum brain college freshmen.
It's enslavement, basically, is what we're fighting.
Right. And the ideology only exists in the hearts of those who think that they will actually benefit from it, but they will not. Communism is a tool for those who want to gain power over others. Mm-hmm. No, socialism is for the people, not the socialists. They live very, very cushy lives.
I was just going to say before, interestingly enough, the walkaway town hall was canceled in the LGBT center in New York City. And the groups that were signing on were the Communist Party USA and the socialist, the Democratic Socialists of New York City. So right. Basically, the LGBT center cowered to communists and socialists. And this is what's happening all over the country. But hopefully we will have a President Trump 2.0 and we can stem the tide. And maybe if things go really well, we can breed another fantastic Republican candidate for the next go round and keep that going until we fix this nonsense.
Oh, I'll tell you, Tracy, I want the 2020 victory so badly just because I think many millions of people, even people who do not follow politics at all, they just want to see those who are crying right now and thrashing to be even more upset. I want to see that. And number two, I cannot even imagine, and I want to be able to imagine, what 4 years of Donald Trump is going to look like when he doesn't have to worry about reelection.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to see sabers drawn.
The only thing that would stop him, I think, is if, and I don't even think it would, given, is if his kids are going to run.
I hope they don't. We don't
need a dynasty, people. Okay.
No, we do not. I do not want that. I'm uncomfortable how close they've gotten to the White House already.
Agreed. We don't need a dynasty. Anyway, I think that's it, Frank. I think this was a good 42 minutes and 3 seconds of talk this morning on this Wednesday. I know that. Yeah, absolutely. They're going to put this out quickly. It's not going to wait till 5, I don't believe. So we'll get this out sometime midday.
Well, wait a second. Then we should tell everybody you're going to be on my show tonight.
I am going to be on your show tonight, and I'm super excited about it because I have a lot to talk about in terms of China, New Zealand, and Australia, and all kinds of stuff going on in terms of the Christchurch thing. And it's going to be a good. I actually was able to wrangle some time out of you for this evening. So,
yeah. Well, there's always time available.
I am just busting your chops. You know that, right?
Always time available, Tracy.
Everybody, thank you so much for listening to this special edition of the Dark to Light podcast with...
No Collusion Val.
And Beans. I should have had a button. You said it the exact same way. You guys can listen...
Sound bites.
Yeah, we need to do that. We need to figure it out. You guys can listen to us on Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple iTunes, and RadioInfluence.com. Make sure to subscribe to the show and please, please share it with your friends. We will talk to you very soon.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out RadioInfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.